Good morning, 740 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now, we have Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. How are you?
I am great. It's always good to have you. I want to start with the smallest thing on my list, but I told somebody I would ask you, so I'm going to ask you this first just so I don't forget and we get pushed out of time. The Board of Governors, or Board of Governance, I guess, for the West Florida Public Libraries has an appointment that comes from the city, from the mayor. I didn't even realize this. I thought that they were all county appointees because it's a county board. But it had been Lori Nesmith, and she has now been removed by you, is what I've been told. Explanation, context, I don't know. What should I understand?
Yeah, so like you said, that board is county, a county function. It's not something that comes across our desk very often. That being said, you know, the mayor's office has appointments across the board, whether it's DIB, ones like these, and we're assessing those all the time. And this board member was an appointee of the previous administration. We're always, you know, looking at, you know, what makes the most sense for the city. And frankly, that's what a mayoral appointment is that the next mayor can put in someone else after we put in someone. So, I have not had a conversation with this person or have met them. Obviously when we start to assess and we had a whole list of what our appointments are, we, you know, make decisions based on that. So nothing really more to it than that.
Got it. And, you know, you would think that your appointees on boards would be people that you would actually know. so that kind of makes right. sense to me a little bit. Lots of stuff to talk about, but the red light camera's been big. The number of violations is enormous. The violations going westbound at 9th and Gregory are massive. It's crazy. The question that keeps coming up, I know people believe this, and I know you love to dispel myths. The duration of the yellow light is set by the FDOT standard based on a formula. As I understand it, it's a minimum of 4 and a maximum of 6 seconds. First things first, did anything change with the duration of the light or the timing of the lights when you put in the red light cameras?
Absolutely not. This is the internet's greatest myth of, oh, they've shortened the yellow lights. No, that is not only is that not possible. And again, I think it's important to point out. So this conspiracy would also include FDOT,
right?
Because all of these lights are on FDOT roads that have the camera. So for this conspiracy theory to work, it would be that this would be the city's idea in cahoots with FDOT. Oh, and by the way, the camera system has zero interaction with the actual light system itself. It's a completely independent system. It has nothing to do with, it's not even connected to touching anywhere in the proximity of the equipment that changes the light. It's completely, utterly false that there's been any change to any light timing or anything like that. That's just what people say when they get a ticket in the mail.
Okay, which I totally understand that. So I wanted to give you a chance to dispel that. But let's talk solutions. If people are running the red light at 9th and Gregory so frequently, I've had two solutions proposed to me, or two explanations that have been proposed to me. Number one is, could it be that they're distracted by the very bright digital signboard right behind the Bay Center, which is very bright and very noticeable and mm-hmm. easily to distract? Second, given that nobody in their right mind ever drives 45 on the bridge or 35 on Gregory, is it possible that the light timing is poorly designed because almost everybody's going 45 through there anyway, and the yellow light should be longer?
All right. So, yeah, first of all, and again, those would be two assessments that would be put in, approved, disallowed by FDOT.
Right.
Just to be clear, that
right.
wouldn't be
of course.
Because of that road. And I will agree, certainly, in the sense that we have an issue from the bridge to that light, and we're proving it right now.
Right.
Right, unfortunately. But with the wrecks, especially motorcycle wrecks coming off of the bridge,
yeah.
not having anything to do with the red light, but half a mile from that red light, but we've had some major issues coming on to Gregory. And should we be surprised, Andrew? It's a, you know, 4-lane superhighway with nothing stopping you.
Right.
That you're supposed to, like you said, quote unquote, go 35 miles an hour in. And this is a part and parcel example of why street design, whether you're talking about South Palafox or you're talking about anywhere in the city, that where you start to narrow lanes and you start to that
oh my God, you're reading my mind. I was going to ask you if you'd propose a road diet on Gregory. Oh my God. Okay, go on.
I mean, if I had my way, again, when you have a 4-lane superhighway that doesn't stop anybody, and then should we be surprised that the light that has done more damage, the approach out of the 19 or whatever it is,
yeah,
that's done more damage than any by far is the light going westbound on at the Bay Center. I mean, should we be surprised? And so, you know, I know that it's alarming for us from a crash and fatality standpoint, motorcycle standpoint on that entire corridor. And then we just now have yet another data point that shows. Listen, the light, if you go watch those 8 videos we just put up yesterday,
yep,
I don't think it had anything to do with that video board.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's people blowing through the light, going around traffic. But it's just when we train the brains of our drivers to say, you know, you can just be hauling butt 4 lanes as fast as you want for 2 straight miles through our city, then why are we surprised at these results, unfortunately? So I would love to work with FDOT and see what we can do.
Oh, great. Well, I mean, you know, and again, slow the cars down and maybe lengthen the light, both could be on the table, because apparently that's the combination that's producing the results we're having. Last quick question on the red light cameras. Are they working? Do we have any evidence that they're either reducing crashes or saving time for PPD? Net, of course, given that they have to spend time, as you mentioned, you know, validating the tickets or whatever, because that's the ultimate question, right? Is not just are people running the red lights, but is that causing crashes? And if not, why do we bother having the enforcement?
Yeah, we've got a cursory kind of 8-month in look at, I mentioned yesterday in the press conference, 3 of the 5 lights we've seen decreases in any type of accident, and then 2 we've seen slight increases. But so we haven't seen some major number of decrease. However, also understand that that's every type of crash. So we're digging deeper into that to say what does injury fatality crashes look like? Because remember, when this began, what we said was we would rather have a fender bender because a light is red and someone's going 15 miles an hour than someone getting T-boned in the intersection. So so I think that matters too.
Win if we're trading major collisions for minor collisions. That's a win too, right?
Correct.
Even though nobody wants
that,
but that's a win.
Prolonged,
right?
And we fully expected a change of, you know, of course, a change of behavior. People don't see it; they just see the photo and 4 sign and slam the brakes. You know, we understand. We've said that from the beginning. We know there's going to be a temporary, flattening of that. But it is something we continue to monitor. And as I said from day one, if we do this for enough of a sample size and we're not seeing the results that we want, then we'll go a different direction.
Airport, again, brief thing, but it's important to people who are getting ready to travel for Thanksgiving or Christmas. A new line, new lane for TSA is open, right? You got 5 now?
That's right. Yep, we're our 5th lane. This is continued positive evolution from last March of having to reach out to Rick Scott because our lines have gotten so bad, you recall. I keep bragging on our team. I believe the longest single hour of being in line in the summer this past summer was 31 minutes. And so meaning if you're there an hour and a half before your flight, get there whenever your carrier tells you to get there. Don't take the mayor's advice. You get there whenever they tell you. But what I'm saying is no one for the entire summer sat more than 31 minutes in line. And that's a huge step forward. And what happened is they came in and said, oh, geez, you guys are understaffed over here. So thanks to Senator Scott for kind of, beating the drum for us and getting folks there. And so this is a second part of that. Was not only did they realize how low we were in staff at that time, you know, 18 months ago or so, but they also said, oh, you don't even have enough equipment. So that's why I tell that backstory. This 5th line was just continued analysis of saying we might have gotten a little bit left behind in terms of making sure that we're modernized and we have enough people to get people through.
The pay standardization that Charles Baer had proposed that would only come into play after next year's election, which you have not even said yet officially you are running for re-election or not, but let's imagine most of us believe that you are or will make that decision. They did not vote in the increase in pay. Are you going to be okay? Are you going to...
I'll survive. I wasn't part or not asked to be part of that conversation.
Right.
You know, I've got a million other things and other people's jobs to create and salaries to worry about than that. I certainly didn't get in it in this job the first time, wondering when pay would increase. If they want to put an item up, I certainly can't stop them. But you probably paid more attention to that than I have.
The Escambia Creosote Works, the Superfund site. The folks showed up in mass to complain that nothing has been done for a long time. You had good news because you were at you were in D.C. And you had talked to, EPA, and they're at least, you know, something in the giant machine of the federal government is starting to work. What's going on?
Yeah, you know, for people hearing this update, you know, everybody, you buckle in. Sometimes the federal government at the EPA level takes a long time. I believe that we designated this as a Superfund site again the year before I was born, and I think in 1983, and we're still waiting for remediation. But as I certainly shared with the group that came in, is the first step of this, it was supposed to happen this year, and again, it's been delayed. So the funding is there, the $34 million, but it's been there since 2021, you know, since before I was even in this job. So there was the delay most recently had been between the bandwidth of Army Corps and EPA over in Mobile. They've actually transferred some of that work over to the Jacksonville office of Army Corps to get some extra bandwidth. So that's good news. But what was supposed to start taking place, which is the remediation of some of the private property yards and stuff, in the Sanders Beach area, instead of starting this year, right now is slated to start in the summer of 26.
Okay.
So it's still moving at a snail's pace. We're waiting on that. And that's what I did share with the Deputy Secretary of EPA, is say, hey, if we're bragging about cutting red tape, I've got a great example that you could make with our Superfund site down here. And I also reminded them that, by the way, one of those yards that needs to be scraped is mine. So if you think it's something that we don't care about, or something I don't think about or see literally when I drive to City Hall every day, you know, it is top of mind for us, and there's certainly no ball in our court in Pensacola in terms of slowing that project down.
PPD chief is an ongoing search process. Obviously, the union has come forward with their strong desire to have Eric Goss, Deputy Chief Goss, to be, you know, put into that position. I assume at this point you guys are reviewing applications, haven't made any decisions. Are you preferring to go internally, or do you have no preference at all?
My preference is to have the best person for the job.
Okay.
And it's not going to be defined by internal, external, or any of that. And certainly, it's no surprise that the union would want to support Deputy Chief Goss, who's been an amazing part of our police department and our community for a long time.
Right.
So no surprise there. But, you know, we are going to have a standard process. And whether Deputy Goss gets it or he doesn't get it, I think everybody deserves, community deserves for this to be a well-thought-through process and that's taken very seriously, and that we ensure that when we're done, we've got the best person for the job, regardless of where they've come from or where they've been. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to meeting with Deputy Chief Goss on this as well. And there should be more news, I would say, probably by next week.
Oh, okay.
Of exactly what that process and timeline will look like in terms of finalists and selection and all that.
All right, I saved the big one for last, even though we only have about a minute, but we've talked about it a lot already today. 2,000 jobs, a triumph ask for shipbuilding at the port and parts building at the port that would not require any local match. What magic is this?
Yeah, how about that, right? Obviously, we've been excited and sitting on this one and working through due diligence of this one for many, many months throughout this year, and working alongside this company to see if this is something that makes sense. But listen, 2,000 jobs at $80,000 a year is a game changer for us. I mean, they would immediately at 2000, once they phased up, they would be the second largest employer inside the city limits. And for us to do that on our property and to not have nearly the amount of money that you've seen in other projects that has to come from the county or the city, I think it's an enormous win for us. And when you think about 2000 jobs at 80,000 average, that's $160 million a year of salary going into our community one way or the other. I mean, that is just an incredible impact that could have, not to mention what their mission is, which is certainly to help on the defense side and to make sure that our military is ready to go. So we love this project. It wins all around, and we certainly are excited to get it in front of the Triumph Board and hopefully get the support. I believe it's the second largest Triumph ask of all time, I think. So we know the gravity of that, and that's a big decision. But we're certainly excited about it.
If this comes to pass, and even if it's 1,000 jobs, good Lord, that would be enormous, right? So this is also, as I read it, almost an entire scrapping of the port plan that came out a few years ago. But again, given the enormity of the win, if we can manage to pull it off, I will 100% take it. The only thing I have to say, and I don't need you to comment necessarily, but Project MAVE, who came up with MAVE as... I don't mean to insult.
Yeah, I don't know.
Somebody's got an aunt.
You'll have to ask the day-to-day folks. But I will say this. Hey, there's been lots of plans. you know what changes plans sometimes, Andrew? Is $160 million with annual salary coming in. So,
yes, no doubt.
You know, steps and lookouts and all those things on port all of a sudden take a little bit of, unless those start paying $80,000 a year.
Right.
This jobs has got to be our number one thing, of course, and it always has been. So to create something like this would be just so huge for us at the port and for our region.
And by the way, so much for the people who always said, well, you know, that D.C. Reeves, he's just in Quint's pocket. All he wants to do is develop it into condos.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not.
Yeah,
you know?
I know. It's a sad day. It's a sad day for those things.
All right. Quick lightning round today. The penny is no longer being produced. Has D.C. Reeves ever collected coins? Is he sad about the penny going away?
Yeah, you know, at a time, I went to Buccaneer Coin Shop on Palafox Street when there was nothing else down there.
Nice.
Grow it up. But of course, they're in probably my mom's attic somewhere or got left behind somewhere. I have no idea where they are.
Sometimes in families, the husband or the male partner, he gets tasked with certain jobs, killing insects, hanging pictures, fixing cars, whatever. In your household, is there anything that you as the man are tasked with doing?
Killing insects, actually, is a good example. I'm the one that has to go get the wasp spray out for sure. All spiders, all hornets, all bees are in my purview. And this is especially funny because Sydney's looking at me right now while I do this. I can't be fully honest with you with all. I don't want to go through the entire list of everything I have to do. I have to do that whenever she's not here.
Got it. And last one, donuts, plain or something exotic?
Ooh, you know, I'm plain. You adapt to your environment. You know, you go to these breakfast things and, you know, you see so many plain donuts. That's what you end up falling into. So
you've been acculturated.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
on my donut game, yeah.
Well, Mayor D.C. Reeves, always a pleasure to talk to you. A lot of stuff. We'll still get to more of it next week. But thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week, sir.
All right. Thanks so much.